We've had wonderful speakers, and now you're getting the end of it. You know what the end is. Is everything all right over there, Mr. Tate? Okay. Everybody here all right?
Yeah.
All right, and we're ready to go then. You know, every time I make an AA talk, I always remember you Texans because of what you say. And I always tell the people, I say, well, I says, in Texas they say that if you don't give your sober ride a date, most likely you don't have one. So my sober ride date is November 13th, 1947. I've had the wonderful experience of living this program through the prime of my life. And whatever the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, the promises it gives, and any words about the program, you can believe, because what I am today or what I'll ever be, I owe to this program. It's just as important to me as the blood in my veins. And the longer I stay sober, the more I need the program. The harder I have to work to stay sober. To just keep and remain, keep what I've got. I can never afford to rest on my laurels. And because, you see, I still have one day's priority on staying sober. And it's up to my spiritual fitness as to whether I'll make that day or not. I am an alcoholic. I'll always be an alcoholic because I truly believe it's an incurable disease, because I have had time to see other people try it. And I have never seen one yet that was successful. Matter of fact, they paid the last penalty, 6 foot under, death. And it progresses right along within you, as regardless of how long you've been sober. I know today if I took a drink, I would be 100 times worse than I was 36 years ago. I know this because I've seen other people try it. And I know what it happens to them, and I am no different. You know, a lot of times I have this question asked me, how do you stay sober 36 years? You know, it's a good question. And that's going to be my subject this morning. It's not braggadocious by no means. I'm not bragging on being sober as long as I've been sober. But what do I have to do every day, and have been doing every day all these years, to stay sober? It lies in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have four basic textbooks in AA. Four. Not one, four. We have the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the foundation. It's 164 pages in this book that was written for me. And they're still for me. And if you're an alcoholic, I think they're written for you. We have AA Comes of Age, which is a history of AA. And if you haven't found out about the history of AA, well, you're missing something in your program. Because, you see, the more you know about something, the more you love it. The more you appreciate what this program is doing for you and wish you came. This book is not used too much in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I look every year with great interest at the amount of AA Comes of Age sold. Now, I'm not a book salesman, But I want to tell you about these books. Last year there were 658,000. That's a hell of a lot of books, you know that? Of Alcoholics Anonymous sold throughout the world. Or through GSO. There was only 28,000 of AA Comes of Age sold. So you see, somebody's not reading it. Because that's not even one AA Comes of Age to one group. There's over 28,000 groups in the United States. 12 and 12, 17 years after Bill finished the big book, well, he sat down and he then gave us an interpretation of his of the 12 steps and 12 traditions after he had been sober for 22 years. He wrote the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the first 5 years of his sobriety. And after he had learned a lot more, then he sat down and wrote this book. And it's well worth reading and studying. And the last is Bill Sees It. This is Bill's writings and his letters and inserts from the big book, 12 and 12, and AA Comes of Age. These four books contain the AA program. We have millions of these self-improvement books. But those are written for normal people. I see I don't have to add any more. I don't say read them, but read them for fun. If you're an alcoholic, here's where your answer is. These books are written for you. And when can you start understanding them? You can start understanding these books as soon as you realize that these books are your books. These books were written for you. And you know that you know that you do know that you know that you do know that you do know they will help you. That's when you start understanding them. You will start consuming them. Every word will just jump out at you. And you can see yourself in these books. And this is how I've stayed sober for 37 years. Is being a student of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stayed in AA, I shouldn't say I've been a student for that length of time, but I've been take 4 years off of that. So that'd be 33 years, over 33 years. I played around in this program. I wouldn't give up my old ideas. You know, I like Mellow Lights, soft music, and Chanel number 5. And my sponsor just kept telling me that wasn't the thing to do. If I was an old, well, I shouldn't say it, bag of wind like him, I'd have felt that way too. I feel that way today. And so therefore, I hung on to my old ideas and I let go of my sponsor. Until such a time came that I had to find my sponsor again. And I went to him and he told me what my trouble was. He told me that I was absolutely the greatest faker he'd ever seen in Alcoholics Anonymous. As he says, I smooched the program, you know. You know, when your first date you ever had, you smooched. But you was scared to get down to real business, you know what I mean? I'm a smoocher. And so, he said, I smooched the program. And And he said he was actually ashamed that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because of what I was doing in my hometown right in front of my AA group. And he said, that's not in the books. He says, you still lie, you still cheat, you still steal, you run around your wife and you're no good father. And he says, you come down here and you crown my shoulder about nobody will stay sober that you're sponsoring. He says, no wonder they don't stay sober. He says, you don't have anything to give them. That's why they don't stay sober. You go around, he says, you're not an attraction by no means. And I said, what am I supposed to do, Chris? And he says, you get into the program. You've been around the fellowship long enough. Now, there's two parts of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is the fellowship, and there is the program. And they're different as daylight and dark. And don't you ever kid yourself. That's why we have the three pertinent ideas. Right after How It Works, it says, A, that we're alcoholic and we cannot manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power, can relieve you of your alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was sorry. Well, you see, that B trips us. When we come in AA, we think human power, human beings, can relieve us by alcoholism. And we stay around groups. And we listen to what people have to say. That's trying to do the same things that we try to do. I think the good book says the blind leading the blind. And everybody wants to give you their opinions related to the idea, but not necessarily a fact. And the big book says that we strive for spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. But if we are going to make it in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's one thing we have to know, and that is the truth. And it's not but one place you can find the truth. And that's in these four books I just went through. There's no other place. That is the program. That is the program. You can't get it from your group. You can't get it from your minister, you can't get it from your mother, your father, your children, your sponsor. It's a self-inflicted program. Alcoholism is a self-inflicted disease. And AA program is a self-inflicted program. It works if I work. It does not work if I don't work. Just that simple. And as long as I was passive about it, I didn't get along too good. So an old cliche says that you gotta grow or you gotta go. One of the two. And I found that I had to grow if I wanted to survive in this program when I was about 5 years sober. He told me what the big book was supposed to do. He says, Wesley, you've been in AA now for 4.5 years. He says, I know it's 4.5 years because every time you get around me, you tell me that. And he says, have you ever read the big book? And I tried to get off on some other subject. And he says, don't jump to traces on me. I ask you a question. Have you ever read the big book? And I said, well, I've spot read. And he says, you're one of them spot readers. I said, yeah, one of them spot readers. He says, well, I'm going to tell you what you're going to have to do. He says, the first thing you're going to have to find out is what your program is. He says, you don't even know what your program is. I said, what are you talking about? I'm an alcoholic. He says, what is an alcoholic? I said, if you take a drink, you get drunk. He says, is that all you know about it? I said, yeah, that's enough. You ever see me take a drink? He said, no, I give you credit for that. First half's the first step. But he says, don't you think it'd be nice to find out what's wrong with you? He says, you know, the first step is in two parts. One is alcoholism, the other is unmanageability. And he says, don't you think it's nice for you to find out about both of them? I said, well, it might be a pretty good idea. He says, well, why haven't you read the doctor's opinion? I said, well, I just never have found it necessary. He said, well, if I was you, I'd start right there. As David said last night, that's the greatest piece of literature ever been written about alcoholism. And so he said, now after you find out what's wrong with you and about the problem, the next thing you have to do is to identify with the problem. And he says, that's why Bill's story is next, right after the doctor's opinion. It says chapter 1, Bill's story. Now Bill's story, Bill was a real alcoholic. But he says, I don't want you to get confused here. He says, you know, Bill is a Yankee. He was born up out in Connecticut. And you're a rebel. You was born down there in South Georgia. And he says, that don't have nothing to do with it. He says, Bill worked on Wall Street, and you're a half-assed electrician in Pompano Beach. That don't have nothing to do with it. He said, we're talking about alcoholism. That's what you identify with. And he says, after you identify, if you're an alcoholic, if you identify, like if you're like Bill, he says, then the next thing you would look for, I believe, would be a solution to your problem. Wouldn't you say so? I said, well, that'd be common sense, yeah. He said, well, the next chapter in the big book just happens to be, there is a solution. I said, is that so? He said, yeah. And he says, that's a direct promise. He says, that's the first promise in the big book. There is a solution. And he says, you find out what the solution is by reading the next three chapters. And that'll put you through the first and second step. He says, then you get to chapter 5. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. He says, you don't know nothing about the path, do you? I said, no, sir, I don't. He says, you've been detouring. I said, yes, sir. He says, well, now, where can you find the path? And I said, I don't know. He says, well, an old Chinaman once said that if you're going to take a 3,000-mile journey, the first thing you have to do is take the first step. He said, now, if you're going down a path, what do you have to do, Wesley? And I said, I don't know. He says, stupid, you take the first step. What's the second thing you do if you're going down that path? I says, I don't know. He says, you take the second step. And he says, what's the third thing you do? I says, you take the third step. He says, that's right. Now you know how to go down the path. Ain't that something? A smart man like me. He says, now you know how to get on the path. And he says the first four chapters of the big book will give you the first and second steps, tell you all about it. But you're just finding out what the solution is. Well, after you find out what the solution is, the next thing you have to do, if you want to put the solution to work, you got to put it into action in your life, right? I said, yeah, that's right. He says, all right, now who's going to put it in action? I says, I don't know. He says, you are. That's who's going to put it in action. And he says, that's what the big book is all about. He says in the foreword of the big book, it says, this book was written by 100 men and women who found themselves in a hopeless state of mind and body. And this is precisely what this book is all about. And then it says a little farther on, lack of power is our dilemma. And this book is to help you find out how to find that power. And he says, now, you are the only one that can do it. I can't do it for you. So, you see, this book, maybe why we don't particularly like it sometimes, is that it puts this program right straddle our necks as individuals. We can't wiggle out of it. And that was what Bill said when he wrote the 12 steps. He said, I'm going to put these things in such a form that people can, that an alcoholic cannot wiggle out of them. And after you make that first and second step, and you go into that third, you can't wiggle out after that. That's the action part. You made up your mind that you're going to carry through with it. You know, in the original manuscript of the big book, right after the three pertinent ideas, it says this. It says, now you have read this book up to this point. If you don't believe what it says, you reread it. And then if you don't believe it, throw it away. Because from here on out, it's just going to get deeper and deeper and deeper inside of you. Well, Chris had used a statement during this process that he was trying to tell me. And he used the inside job. He said, Wesley, you got to do an inside job. And I didn't know what he's talking about. But he says, you do the inside job, Wesley. He says, you know, you're on the path, and that's what the path does for you. When you're on that path and you go through these steps, it's an inside job. And he said, you know, he says the big book is so laid out that it carries you right down that path one step at a time, the first 164 pages. And he said it happens in the first seven chapters. And he said that you're going to have to do this for yourself. He says after you get to finished how it works, and it says now you're at step three, step four, step five, step six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. And he says, this is up to you. You have to get your own program. This I can't do for you. I've just showed you how to get on the path. Well, you see, if this man had not took that time with me this morning, I couldn't have got on the path. Because I didn't have the mentality. I didn't have what it took to get on the path. But I knew that I was wrong. I was like you, Frank. I knew I was wrong because everybody else was getting a lot more out of this program than I was. I could see it in their face. You got to believe what you see. And I was bluffing. I was bluffing my AA. I was bluffing all the way through. Maintaining status quo so I could go ahead and do what I had done in the past. And so I went back home, and on my way home I made a decision that I was going to study the books. And I read the big book, and I couldn't find out what it was, these steps were supposed to do for me after I got on the path. I couldn't figure it out. And one day, by chance, I picked up AA Comes of Age, and I was reading Bill's story and about him having a spiritual experience, and said he would lie on a mountain, and this breath of this wind went through him, a spirit of wind went through him, and he felt clean, and it scared him to death. And he didn't know what happened to him. And the next day, Abby came by to see him. That was Bill's sponsor. Came by to see him, and he gave him a book, Variety of Religious Experiences by William James. And he said, here, read this. And Bill couldn't read it because it was too heavy for him, because Bill wasn't interested in it. He couldn't get his mind on it, just like I was with the big book. And all of a sudden, Bill realized that this book was trying to tell him what had happened to him the day before. And immediately, he consumed the book. He understood every word in it. You see, when you know something is going to help you, and you know it, it's going to help you. And this book told Bill that he had a spiritual experience. And it told him what a spiritual experience was. And he said a spiritual experience is deflation at depth. How many of you have ever heard that statement? Hold up your hands. Ready? Ready? It comes of age. It's in italics. And this is the inside job. Deflation at depth. Getting rid of self. S-E-L-F. Getting rid of self-centeredness and selfishness. This is it. The big shot. And I realized that I started reading the 12 steps in how they were structured. And I found out exactly what they were doing. You know, Bill had this same trouble. But he had the most minute measure of time. He got rid of it because he had a spiritual experience. And when the 12 steps were first written, they said having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps. Well, that was the way they were written originally in the original manuscript, in the original book. But they changed that to a spiritual awakening. And I think the reason they changed it to spiritual awakening is for Dr. Bob, the other co-founder. He was absolutely opposite from Bill. He was 100 times more spiritual man than Bill ever thought about being. But Dr. Bob, self got in the way. And he couldn't get rid of it. For 2.5 years after he come into AA, he had a phenomenal craving, as Dr. Silkworth says, for a drink of alcohol. And he couldn't get rid of it. Until he had a spiritual awakening. Now the reason I know that's in this book here. It says on page 212, I think it is. I know it's on 212. I memorized it. Well, I like to remember. I think. I know it's there. Let me read it to you. It says, Dr. Bob did not need me for his spiritual instruction. He had already had more than I. What he did need when we first met was the deflation at depth and the understanding that one drunk can give to another. So, you see, that's what the 12 steps are set to do. They are to give you a way to eliminate ego. E-G-O. As long as we have ego, we edge God out of our lives, or we ease God out of our lives. As we can't defy God and rely on God at the same time. And if we don't rely on God, we are defying God. And so the 12 steps are so structured that after you take the 11, then having had a spiritual awakening as a result, it's an educational process. Now, they explain this in the big book. 3 times in the first 4 chapters, they have a footnote. 3 times how important it is. On page 25, 27, and 47, it refers you back to Appendix 2 in the big book to tell you the difference between a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience. And it also says on the bottom of the page of this appendix number 2, it says that we find that our members have tapped, they find, our members find that they have tapped an inner resource and it's in every man, has retapped an inner resource that they call a power greater than themselves. And not until you have a spiritual awakening and remove self can you tap that power. And that's the way it is. Sound like a preacher, don't it? But this is the AA program. This is it. I can't have it. If I didn't find it out, I wouldn't have stayed sober. And this is the only way you can be happy. And you have to do it, not me. I got to do it for Wesley, and you've got to do it for you. No one can do it for you. You have to find your own program in these books. Well, to start off with, the first thing he does, he makes you start deflating, because he says to you, we admit that we're powerless over alcohol. Well, how did AA approach you? How did a member of AA approach you? They sit down and they told you about themselves. They didn't criticize you. They told you about themselves so that you would identify with them. And as you identified with them, you started talking about yourself. And finally you said to whoever your 12 step, and then you said, my God, if that's the way you are, that's the way I am too. And so therefore, I'm like you. I'm an alcoholic. And so that's where the deflation starts, right there. You did it yourself. If someone had told you you was an alcoholic, you would rebel. You got fighting mad about it. And closed up like a clam. And nobody could have ever said to you that you're an alcoholic. And that's why we, in Alcoholics Anonymous, suggests that the member calls us, the drunk calls us, we don't call him. We have to have an open mind. And this is how he starts his process of deflation. And the second thing he tells us, that our lives are unmanageable. Now, who ever heard of telling a drunk that his life was unmanageable? A great thing like me, I can't manage my life. My God. You don't know what you're talking about. But after listening to y'all, you become kind of leery about your own self. You know, I found out that I couldn't manage my life. I found out in any department. To make any difference what department was, I couldn't manage. And you know what I thought my worst management was money. You know, I could always make money, but I could never manage it. I would always buy what I needed. I never bought what I wanted. I always bought what I wanted. I never bought what I needed. And if you'd sell me something on credit, I'd take two. Right away. Making a difference. Well, I started thinking about this, and I said, well, I better get me a CPA and let him start handling my money. And I said, well, he'll tell people all over town what a poor businessman I am. I can't afford that. See, that's pride. And I said, they get me a combination bookkeeper and secretary. And I said, I can't do that. I'll have an affair with her. Then I will be in trouble. And one day I just happened to think about my wife. Just happened to think about her. And I said, you know, when I married that gal, she had $1,000. Now, I know she had $1,000 because we spent it on our honeymoon. I know that. And I said, that gal knew how to handle money because she saved this $1,000 out of a little old stinking dry cleaning business, you know, and me a big shot. And I said, she knows how to save that money. I'm going to talk to her. So I went home to see her, and I says, Rena. You know, honey running off my lips. I wanted something out of her. That morning, we had a big fight. And she said, what do you want? You know, not knowing that I was coming home with this proposition, I said, I want to talk to you. And she says, I don't have time. I says, come on in there, I'll talk to you. She says, Weston, I don't have time for that this morning. I said, well, you don't even know what I'm talking about. She said, well, I got a good idea. I said, no, you don't either. Always trying to outfigure me, you know. And I said, why don't I sit down and I want to talk to you. She said, all right, what do you want? Very unappreciative. Me trying to straighten out my life. I said, I want you to come to work for me. She said, what can I do for you? Oh. I said, I want you to manage my money. She says, I thought you wanted me to come to work. What money do you have to manage? I said, don't be facetious. I said, I'm trying to give you opportunity. Opportunity. I said, you have insecurity about whether your children are going to be fed, or whether you're going to have a roof over your head or clothes on your back. And here I'm offering you opportunity. And she said a few words that I'm not going to repeat here. But she said finally, well, we've tried everything else. We just want to try that. The moment she said that, I let go. You see, I was ready. Because I knew I couldn't manage money. And the reason I tell that story is that's the first time that I ever give a piece of Wesley Parish to anybody. Because I could run my own business and you keep your nose out of it. You know what I mean? And I gave her this turned it over to her. And I've never taken it back. Never. Never worn it. Because I've never had a bad financial day since that day. Through the grace of God. And this is how I've stayed sober. I got away from something I couldn't do well. I can't be everything to everything. Like David said last night, Alcoholics Anonymous can't be everything to everything. We'll fall flat of our face. Nobody can be everything to everything. And so I let go. So that released me to do the things I could do. I could do well, and I prospered because she managed the money. I had nothing to do with it. Up to that time, I floated a lot of checks, you know, wallpaper hanger. I haven't been a wallpaper hanger since that day. Because she saw the checks were good when they were written. I'd write one just to get out of a mess long enough and then work like the devil trying to get the money in there to cover the check. You know, that's the hardest work in the world. Is trying to run down money to cover a bad check. I don't have to do that anymore. That's the way it is. I'm talking about Florida people in Florida. I know Texas and don't have no white people like that. Well, you know that's deflation. That's where I started to deflate. I went to see Chris. And I said, Chris, I want you to be my living manager. He said, what are you talking about? I said, I want you to teach me how to live. You see, I didn't know how to live. I didn't know the first thing about it. I said, I want to live like you. I want to learn to be honest. I want to be a good businessman. I want to quit lying, cheating, and stealing. I want to be a good husband and a good father. And Chris looked at me and said, I wouldn't take that job on for all the tea in China. I said, why not? He says, it's just too much wrong with you, boy. And I says, Chris, I need you. And Chris finally said, well, I'll tell you. He says, I'll take you on for size, Wesley. But if you ever go haywire, I'm through with you. I said, that's the deal. And for 25 years or longer, that man taught me how to live through the grace of God. And that's sponsorship. A sponsor is someone that deals with you with your living problems toe to toe. And if you don't have a good sponsor, you're missing something. Someone that you can lay everything right on top of the table to, unashamed, and discuss it with him. And that's the way Chris and I were. I used to go see Chris And I'd tell him what I wanted to do, and he'd take off on a rampage. Oh, he'd raise hell. And argue with me for 2 or 3 hours. He didn't have nothing else to do. And finally he'd say, "Well, I think it's a pretty good idea. Go ahead and try it." I said, "Why didn't you say that 3 hours ago?" He said, "I just wanted to see how strong your convictions were, that's all." You kill a guy who does that to you, you know. But you see, he was teaching me how to think. I didn't know how to think. You know there's two sides to every coin. There's heads and tails. I didn't know that. I just thought it was one way, like a bull in the china closet. Boom, right on through, you know. Hit or miss, it didn't make any difference. What a great thing that was to learn. And so I found out about that. And then I wouldn't accept a God of my understanding. I didn't have an understanding of God. I could accept him. Well, I went out to see this woman to find out about that. And when I walked into her house, she was baking a cake, and she told me to go sit in the living room, and she'd be right in. So I sat in a rock in the living room. My eyes went to the wall, and there was a picture. It was a sailor standing at the wheel of a ship, and around this ship was a very rough sea. And this picture absolutely fascinated me because this young man didn't have a trace of fear in his face. Not one trace. This artist did a beautiful picture. This man was absolutely serene at a storm at sea. And I said, "My God, he should be full of fear." Because I'd rode out 3 typhoons in the China Seas, and I know what a rough sea is. But he had no fear. And finally I realized right behind this young man stood the Prince of Peace. His hand was on his shoulder and he was pointing the way. And I said, "You know, this young man's got a friend. He's got a friend." And my mind went back to the first day I was in that A. I didn't have one friend. Not one. You know why I didn't have a friend? Because I didn't want a friend. Because everybody was taking my inventory, telling me what I should do and what I shouldn't do, and raising Cain about my conduct and everything else. And I got sick and tired of it. My wife used to say, "My God, why did I marry you? I had 50 to pick from and I got you out of the litter. Why?" I don't know. My mother would say, "Why did God give me a son like you?" I don't know. Little preacher used to come around. It'd sick him on me, you know. 10 minutes from me, he'd bubble over his fist and he says, "Boy, you're going to hell." And I said, "I'll meet you there." Oh, God. You know, that's awful. You see, I had a closed mind. You couldn't open it with a crowbar. People I work for says, "When you get through with this job, boy, don't you ever put your foot on my property again. Time is too short to mess around with drunks like you. I don't like to be talked to like that." And so therefore, I clammed up and I had a shell built around me that nobody could penetrate. And so what happened was that when you come to see me, though, you didn't criticize me. You told me about yourself, as I said a while ago. And through this communication, you transmitted to me what your program was, and I told you I had the same program. And I said, "I'm an alcoholic too." You see, communication is the start of all understanding. If you want to understand something, you have to communicate with it. You show me a salesman that don't communicate with his product through specifications or whatever literature he has on it, and get familiar with a piece of equipment, he cannot sell it. He knows nothing about it. You see, communication is very, very important. And so what happened was that I realized that this young man had communicated with the Prince of Peace. And I didn't even talk to the woman about what I came to talk to her about. I had my answer and I went back to my place of business and got a wooden box about half the size of this podium and put it in a little town delivery truck. And as I rode around to some electrical jobs I had, I talked to the Prince of Peace. And I poured my heart out to him. And finally I started talking to him about the nitty-gritty of alcoholism, the insanity, the things I felt so guilty about inside. I did some awful things under the influence of alcohol, and I wouldn't forgive myself for them. And he'd say, "Well, you're an Alcoholics Anonymous." I says, "I did them." He says, "That really doesn't make any difference. You don't do them today when I ride around with you." I says, "Yes, but I did do them." And he says, "Well, that's yesterday." He says, "Yesterday's a council check, tomorrow's a promissory note, today's cash, spend the cash." I says, "I did it, I can't help it." He says, "Would you ever redeposit a council check?" I said, "If I'd have thought about it, I'd have tried it. Sure would." I just didn't think about it. But one night I went to a meeting. You see, when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear in this program. I went to this meeting and this woman got up and she said this one little old simple thing. She says, "You know, the greatest thing on earth is to learn to forgive others. But the greatest of greatest things on earth is to learn to forgive yourself." And I says, "That's the hang up. No wonder I am like I am. I can't understand anything because I'm blocking everything away from me. I'm living in yesterday. Because everything I felt guilty for was not today, it was yesterday. I did yesterday, not today." And I said, "That's asinine of you to think do that. I'm killing everything that the Alcoholics Anonymous program is trying to do for me for feeling guilty and ashamed of what I did under the insanity of alcoholism. Does that make sense to you?" And all of a sudden, I didn't regret a drink I ever took. I didn't regret a dime I ever spent on it. I didn't regret an insane thing I ever did under the influence of alcohol. I regret the heartaches I caused my loved ones, yes. But if that's what it took, that's what it took. And I started living in today. Today is my day. Today is my day. You see, if I had not been an alcoholic, I wouldn't be here this morning. Did you realize that? You wouldn't want no part of me. I'd be one of them normal people back there in Pompano Beach, Florida. Never left town. That's right. It's just that. It's wonderful. I have never in my life had anybody in Pompano Beach, Florida come up and slap me on the back and say, "Wesley, I certainly like to see your wall-eyed loop-legged." I've never been congratulated being drunk. Has anybody here ever been congratulated? I never have. But I've had hundreds of people come up to me in Pompano Beach and slap me on the back and says, "Wesley, you're a credit to the community. We need more people like you." How about that? I served 12 years on the Broward School Board as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everybody in the school system everywhere knew I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't mind telling them. There was nothing anonymous about me, Frank. Yes, sir, this program is my life. This program is my life. And I believe in it. I can't do any good for Alcoholics Anonymous hiding underneath a basket. I don't run around and tell people openly, but if they want to know, I'll sure tell them. So this program has meant a lot to me. And so I found a God of my understanding. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I trusted this power. I trusted it. I quit defying the power. And I started relying on the power. And when I did that, what happened? I made a decision that my way was a wrong way. And I wanted to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood Him. Oh, that's great. Somewhere over in the big book, about page 90, it says, brand on every man's mind that he can say sober regardless of anyone. The only thing he has to do is trust God and clean house. Trust God and clean house. It doesn't say clean house and trust God. It says trust God, then clean house. Because if you don't trust God, you're bothered with that fear, that inner fear that only you know that you've got. That eating you got inside, that football you got inside. Afraid somebody's going to find out that you did this. Or some thing that you feel guilty or ashamed of. The only way to get rid of that is through trusting God. There's no other way. No other way that I've ever found. And I had to do it because, you see, I had to quit pretending to be something that I wasn't. Because I had to look at myself exactly the way I was. Lay myself out on the table and bisect myself right down the middle and stretch it open and look at it. I had to take the fourth step. And I had to be fearless about it. And I had to search. I had to ferry out all of these things. He says you've got to be thorough from the very start. That's what the book says. Don't turn your head. And this is why you have to be fearless. This is why you've got to trust God. If you trust God and you're one of God's children, this is what the big book says, there's nothing that will ever harm you. Nothing. And I believe that. It's just that way. Believe this book. Believe it. Number one man I ever heard put in words what I found when I took my fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was Howard Benthoff of Cleveland, Ohio. And Howard said that he had gangrene of the soul. And I don't know of a better way to put it, but it's the best thing I ever found out about Wesley Parrish, because I became willing to do something about it. And I went immediately, as the big book said, right into my fifth step and admitted to God, to myself, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. These are positive words. I hear people say, well, you can retake your fifth step over and over and over. That ain't what it says. It says, it may be necessary for some people to take, but it says the exact nature of your wrongs. It says take that list that you made in the fourth step and admit the exact nature of your wrongs. It's not but one way. The 12 and 12 says there's not but one way to take a fifth step, and that's to be honest with yourself, be honest with God, and be honest with your fellow man. That's it. That's deflation. And then it says that we, had a blank, I'm used to that, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Our sins of commission, the things we do every day that we know we shouldn't do. And 8 says that humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Sins of omission, the things that we know we should do that we don't do. It's absolutely opposite, is my interpretation of it. Some people may have other interpretations, but these are good interpretations for me. Did you know when the 12 steps were written, they wasn't called 12 steps? They were called directives. 12 directives. They eased up on them. Let's call them 12 steps. When you read the original manuscript after the third step, it's all at the eye level. It's not on the we level, it's on the eye level. this is what I have to do, or this is what I did, or this is what you have to do. We don't have nothing to do with it. This is when we put this program into action in our lives. It's thrown right around our neck, just like a shepherd carrying a lamb. And you hold him there. And you hold this program close to you. You know, a shepherd puts a lamb around his shoulders and carries the lamb. You know why? Because the lamb run away. He kept running away, and so the shepherd puts him around his neck so he will become comfortable around the shepherd. And this is what you have to do with this program. It's got to be a garment. You have to wear it as an individual. If you get this program and get it out of what's in this program for you, made a list of all persons who have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Deflation. Make amends except where so will injure them or others. Deflation. Because this is where we've got to start taking others in consideration. We're not a bull in a china closet anymore. And then it says, continue to take personal inventory. Regardless of how far you think you've come, you're still a human being, and you're going to make human error. And this is a program of progress, not perfection. So therefore, it is necessary to continue to take a personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. That's deflation. Never stop it. And then sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. In other words, it's just telling you that you do God's will. Well, what's God's will for me? God said, build a better world. And I said, how? I'm so large. It's so large and so complicated. I'm so small and useless, Sam. There's nothing I can do. And God in all His wisdom said, well, all you have to do is just build a better you. That's all. That's it. You don't expect great things out of you. He expects you to do the best you can with you. And then you try to carry this message. And having had a spiritual awakening as the result, in other words, you have absolutely got away from self-reliance and you become with God-reliance. You cannot have self-reliance and God-reliance at the same time. It's impossible. So you eliminate self and add God. You have a God conscience. And then you have something to carry. You try to carry this message to other alcoholics. The best 12-step work I can do is just walk down the streets of my hometown sober, carrying the message of AA in my heart. Somebody's watching. I'm attracting somebody if I'm living this program, because we carry it in our face. You can't help from carrying in your face what you carry in your heart. And this is what attracts alcoholics to Alcoholics Anonymous. And practice these principles in all of our affairs. In other words, it's to practice the truth in all your affairs with your fellow man. Not just AA members. Society at large, everybody. It works. It works. If I work. It does not work unless I work. I've lived one-third of the program as far as with you. And then Bill added the 12 traditions, which is a continuation, I believe, very strongly, in the continuation of the deflation. Because if I stop growing at this particular time after I've had this spiritual awakening, If I don't keep my garden clean, if I don't keep deflated inside, I will become inflated all over again. How many times have you seen that in AA? Tremendous AA members carry this program proudly, and all of a sudden they just disintegrate before your very eyes. And you say, I wonder what happened. They inflated. They started maybe making too much money. They might have went back to a few of their old ideas. Well, you have to have something to grow on in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I found the 12 traditions, and it's the continuation of the 12 steps in deflation. And I use the 12 steps in my life, the 12 traditions in my life, along with the 12 steps. And it works. And it works. You see, if you want to be happy, there's three qualifications you have to have. Number one, you've got to love yourself. Number two, you've got to love God. And number three, you've got to love your fellow man. And you have to live in unity with your fellow man if you love your fellow man. And therefore, the 12 traditions are given us, and I say they're a continuation of the 12 steps in our everyday living. Like the first one says, I'll read them in the first person. My common welfare comes first. What is my welfare? My welfare is staying sober. It comes above everything else. Over my wife, my children, my job, my business, or society. Because without me being sober, nobody wants nothing to do with me. So it's got to be my welfare. And that's first things first. And I can't miss that a day of my life. I can't forget that every day of my life. I've got to live it. My personal recovery depends upon my AA unity. My personal recovery depends upon me living in unity with you, not you living in unity with me. That has nothing to do with it. I've got to love you whether you love me or not. You know, the great teacher once said, what is it to love those who love you? That's nothing. But to love those who hate you is something. The world don't live that way, but listen, they are normal. I have to go back to that all the time. They're normal. We have a program of living. And this program not only makes you happy, it gives you the joy of living. And what a difference. What a difference. But it's got to be put into action in your life. And you're the one that has to do it. And I'm the one that has to do it. I have but one ultimate authority. One. The same ultimate authority I found back in the third step. There's a Greek word that explains my ultimate authority to me, and the word is akape or agape. I don't know which is the right pronunciation, don't make any difference. But it's a love that is spontaneous, it's unlimited, and it's unmotivated. God loves me just in spite of me. And that's my ultimate authority. And that's the God that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. He loves each and every one of us in spite of us. Spontaneously unlimited and unmotivated. Do you remember when a person came to see you first time? It was just spontaneously, he just wanted to give you something. And he went on, it was just unlimited, it seemed, that what he wanted to do for you. And was it anything about you that would motivate such a thing? Not me. Oh God, what a mess I was. But that's our God that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the spirit that we feel in this room. You can hear it. You can feel it. It's here. I am but a trusted servant. I do not govern. The only requirement of AA membership is desire to stop drinking. That's all I have to do. If I won't take pills, I can take pills and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I want to smoke grass, I can smoke grass and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now that don't sound good, does it? But that's none of our business. We are in AA. We are members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have one thing to contend with, and that's alcohol. And if we get out and over and above that, we are doing nothing but cutting our own throats. Don't quit letting your heart dictate to your head. Be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when anything is causing your group disturbance in your group, you get rid of it through your group conscience. This I say to you in earnestly. That's what, if anyone wants anything on these programs, they write me to Post Office Box 333, Pompano Beach, Florida, and I'll send you 22 pages of typewritten information cataloged that's found in the Conference Approved Literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, where it tells you that an alcoholic is the only person that can belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you want to get straightened out on it, give me a ring. And I've never had one of these other people to read this that they didn't agree with it. So write me and I'll send it to you immediately. Because I love you. I love you. And I don't want nothing to happen to this program. And I love those others too. Don't misunderstand me. I love them too. They're God's children like you are and me. But I just don't understand them. And so it's up to us to protect our own selves. You know, we gave this program to 202, the last count I had, 202 different fellowships. We haven't been selfish with this program. And they use it today, everywhere. Well, they got a new one called Prostitute Anonymous. Their slogan is, don't take that first buck. Jim, how you like that one? 33-33061. AA is fully self-supporting, client outside contributions. You say, well, what's so important about that? It's a lot of importance about that. Show me a person. I want to be happy. I want to have the joy of living. And you show me a person that don't meet his responsibility, and I show you a person that's not happy. It's just that simple. You know, that's all there is to it. For years, I didn't meet my responsibilities, and I had to drink to survive, to face reality. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my responsibility to support Alcoholics Anonymous with everything I've got. And it's my business to see that my group supports Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't belong to a group that didn't send money to GSO or in a group. I just wouldn't belong to them because they are not taking care of their responsibilities. I used to sit next to a millionaire when I first come in AA, and I love this man today because he taught me a lot. Every time, just as the chairman would say, well, we are self-supporting, so forth and so on, well, the basket would start. Well, he should have dug in his pocket and got out this little pinch box right then, you know, but he didn't. He waited till the basket got right to him. He'd put it on his lap. And he'd reach in his pocket and get this little snap pocketbook stamped here all over the room. Embarrassing. Now, he's a millionaire. He was president of Dobbs Hats. And he'd reach in there and he'd go around and he'd come up and he'd bring out a Texas half. That's a dime. And he'd drop it in the collection. And I'd say, that tight son of a bitch. If he don't put but a dime in there, I ain't going to put nothing. Now, who was I hurting? Me. Because I wasn't meeting my responsibilities. We have a program. And the world wants our program. And it's ours. Just as long as we support it as a member. That's it. That's our responsibility. And don't any of us ever forget that. AA don't tell you to give till it hurts. It tells you to give till it feels good. That's right. It's just that way. And you see, I found a program that I can live and be happy. I found a program that I can be enthusiastic about. I love the program more today than I did the day I came in. In 10 years, at 10-year level, I love the program twice as much. At 20-year level, I love it three times as much. And at 30-year level, I live four times as much. I'm just getting so full of it, I don't know what's going to happen when I'm going to reach 50. I just don't know. I hope I'm popping at the seams. I wish that you would take these books in consideration and start studying them. Now, these books you study because, as Dave said last night, it says here, the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. You do not read a textbook. You study a textbook. Now, these four books here happens to be Florida books. I brought them with me. They just my companion. But when I got to Midland the other day, I checked to be sure, and they're just like Texas books. So, I'm going to leave you with them, and I love you. Thank you.